Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Life is a joke when you're a queer person. I feel like you just feel like such an outsider, or you just grow up feeling so weird. And then you're like, everybody's pretty weird, I guess. And then, I don't know, maybe it gives you a good sense of, or you get bullied and it gives you a sense of humor. I don't know.
I'm diking out, you're diking out. Let's dike out together. See what it's all about.
Diking out, diking out, diking out.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast that's going through some vocal changes that have nothing to do with hormones. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
That's me. I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're diking out with musician Naomi McPherson from Muna about life on the road. Please excuse my voice.
Let this be a lesson that this is what happens to your voice when you're just being too damn gay.
Yeah.
Watch you lose out, your guys. Voice.
Keep it. Don't go too far on that spectrum. Don't go too far down that Kinsey path, guys.
You can't lean into your gay summer or else you will wreck
sound like this.
Your vocal cords.
God, how we doing otherwise?
You know, we're going to make it through. I will spare your voice a little bit and do the announcements
quick.
We're going to be hosting watch parties for the new season of the L Word Generation Q at Henrietta Hudson every week. So if you're in the New York area starting this Friday, we're going to have like a little pre-show. Look out on Instagram at Diking Out. We'll post details there about what's going to be going on. It's going to be a lot of fun. They're having a premiere this Friday. And then again, that first episode will play on Sunday, and then it'll be every Sunday after that for the rest of the series. It should be a really fun time. Henrietta Hudson is going to have three screens projecting the episodes, one outside. So it should be great if you feel more comfortable outside. There's a way to watch it that way. And then everybody will be hanging out at Hens afterwards. What a good time. If you haven't yet subscribed to our podcast, if you just type it into the search every week, you can really save yourself by just subscribing on whatever platform you listen to us, and be sure to rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Also, we create an extra episode every week. This one's was very long. We talked about Melody's trip to Fire Island. We talked about my fateful run-in with a past guest and my number one crush. And I give the details of that in our off-topic this week. We talk about DaBaby, Lil Nas X. We talk about the Tampa Bays a little bit more, about the behind the scenes. So we talked about Tampa Bays on last week's episode, the new Amazon docuseries about lesbians in the Tampa area. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of information. We were saying, who knows? Let's keep an open mind here. Well, what we did learn from one of them is that they are all cis-identifying lesbians in the Tampa area. And
they're all friends.
They all know
each other before the show. It's not forced. We've made contact with the Tampa Bays.
Yes. And we're looking forward to the premiere this fall and getting at least one, if not some of them, on the pod to dike out with later and also talk about some other things going on in gay Florida. So much on that off-topic episode. So check that out. It's only $5 a month on Patreon for access to that. And yeah, shout out to Tampa Bay's for the love. I want there to be a mutual back and forth love fest between Diking Out and the Tampa Bay's. Okay, now that that's out of the way, Melody, do you have it in you to tell us what's the gayest thing you did in this super gay week of yours?
Gayest week of my life? Finally made the pilgrimage to the Mecca that is Cherry Grove on Fire Island. I did no research. I didn't know what I was in for. I get it now. I love it there. It was a very fun, very body positive weekend. And by that, I mean, you know, I've been documenting this on the podcast, maybe more on the Patreon. I'm going through my little body positivity journey. So I was topless on Cherry Grove. That feels pretty gay, but
you did it.
I did it.
So with the group of people you went with?
Yeah. Like, I'll normally go topless, like, with Allie.
Yeah.
If we just go to the beach and we don't know anyone. But
right.
Socially topless. Went to some fun pool parties at the Pines. Went to Low Tea. If you know, you know. And, you know, kept making my voice sound worse and worse through all these activities. On the last night we were there, we all went skinny dipping in the pool we shared. And
nice.
That was nice. Everyone has amazing tits, but like no one's compares to Jeanette's. I need to tell everybody about Jeanette. I met the queen of Cherry Grove. This lesbian is like one of the actually most beautiful souls I've ever met too, but at the same time, like one of just the hottest girls. Like, I was already warned that I would be meeting someone with the quote most perfect hits on the island. That's all I knew going into the meeting. So then, you know, you meet and you hold eye contact, but then you're like, what's going on? And we met her for a wine and cheese hour. We stayed at a women owned inn called Wisteria, women only. And they had a wine and cheese hour every day at 5:00, and she came by for that. And that just speaks to how well-loved she is on the island, because the women who run it are like, no one's allowed for the wine and cheese. Jeanette is the only person allowed.
Wow.
That these older dykes would let into the house.
What makes her boobs so perfect?
So we all, the gayest thing is actually after we went skinny dipping, we all saw them. We're all just like not really talking about it until the next morning at breakfast. And we all just were like, had a 10-minute discussion about Jeanette's boobs. Perfectly proportioned, so like perky, but they didn't look fake. They're not fake. She's so perfectly tanned, like head to toe. She's stunning. We were all just like so squirrely around her at first, but then like you loosen up because she is so warm. She is so just like, she is a ball of love. And I bring her up because we need someone to bask in her love more than we can, because we're all in relationships, everyone in the house. So Jeanette is single. She is into femme girls. She is a lesbian. She's a cis lesbian, lives in the Long Island area. If you're interested in knowing what Jeanette's all about, I did get the okay from her, by the way, because I was like, Jeanette, she listens to the podcast. I was like, as you know, we do our gayest thing. Do I have permission to essentially objectify you on the podcast? Because she was so used to us just telling her like, you're so hot. Allie had gone to bed before skinny dipping and missed it and was like so bummed to have missed Jeanette's boobs, and was talking to her the next day and was like, I'll be honest, Melody really loves my boobs, but when I asked her, are they better than mine, Melody said, they're better than everyone's. I feel like such a creep, but honestly, like, I'm bringing this all up to, like, you know, really sell this girl. Like, we need to find her a girlfriend. Her handle on Instagram is JMC Sunbeam. She is a sunbeam, guys. She's everywhere we went on the island. Everyone knew her. Everyone was so excited to see her. She is such good energy. We were like, we went to a drag show. They knocked off like some total off the bill because we're with Jeanette, you know, like everyone knows Jeanette. Everyone loves Jeanette. I love Jeanette.
I know we're trying to sell her to our U-Haulers, but someone who comes to mind is past guest Jess Rothschild from
Hot
Takes and Deep Dives. Because,
yes.
Or would it be too much of the same thing? Because they're both seem to be like social butterflies and have that energy.
They're both from Long Island.
They both are femme for femme.
Yeah, and actually they both hang out with a lot of like gay men.
Yeah.
And kind of seem to have similar social circles. We'll just have to see. Let's float this to Jess.
Yeah. And Jeanette, if you're listening, you know, maybe slide into Jess's DMs because
JessXNYC on Instagram.
It seems like if the two of you got together, J&J, you'd be unstoppable. You might take over the world. So
wow.
I ship it.
I do too. Okay. Let's see. I mean, this is the gayest I've ever been on this podcast. I mean, I just want to stress just how many times I asked her if it was okay to say all this. She's so hot and so nice, guys. Get on it.
And she listens to the pod, which I find the most attractive thing about her.
Oh, yeah. I was introduced to her right when I got on the island, and it was like, this is Melody, this is so-and-so. And then once it was brought up, it was like, Melody host Diking Out, she knew exactly who I was. And it's like, how do I love you even more? Flattery.
That's gay amazing. Wow. Love it. Well, and it was worth losing your voice. Just like Ariel and the Little Mermaid, you know, we all make sacrifices to live
Do
our
you
dreams.
Hear how my voice sort of came back as I was speaking about Jeanette?
Yeah.
From how it was at the top of the app. I don't know. She's magic. Carolyn, if I could turn red, I'd be red right now. Let's move on. What is the gayest thing you did this week?
A lot. I'm actually going to have to save one for next week. Honorable mention is that somebody told me that I was really giving off major Holland Taylor vibes, which...
Oh, my God.
I feel like I can kind of actually see it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've only done one of those, which celebrity do you look like app things once, and I got Holland Taylor. For those of you who are like, that sounds familiar, she plays Peggy Peabody in The L Word, but is more famously Sarah Paulson's partner.
Yeah.
In our favorite May December romance. And I got Holland Taylor on this app, and I'm like, for the first time, I kind of see it. Like a little, it's the complexion, a little bit of the cheekbones.
Yeah, I see it.
There's a little bit of Holland Taylor. So
the vibes
person,
means energy. So
yeah, kind of like energy and what I was giving off. And this person told me that, and they're like, and I'm saying this as a compliment. I hope you take it that way, or else I wouldn't have said it. Maybe just because she's older. I'm like, if I had one wish for myself, it's to age into a Holland Taylor. Like that is my life goal, is to turn into that kind of a lesbian when I'm older. So I will take it for sure. The gayest thing was that, for sure, I cried in therapy describing the plot of an episode of Buffy to my therapist. And you'll know which one, because we talk about it on next week's episode. Sometimes we have these interviews with our guests, and then it becomes fodder for therapy, where I'll question some of my feelings that I had during the interview. And as I was telling my therapist, I just started crying again. I'm like, why? And she's like, let's investigate. What is it about this episode of Buffy? And I was like, could it be that it's just good TV? And she's like, no. It's obviously hitting on something for you that you can't even bring it up without crying. I'm even like not even directly thinking about it right now, and my eyes are welling up. It's like this crazy thing that this episode of Buffy, which you'll learn about next week, has on me. But those of you who are Buffy heads can probably guess. And it's not seeing red. Okay.
I really got to watch this.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I want to cry.
It's always fun when I have an episode that I can talk about in therapy. And when you hear next week's episode, you'll be like, oh yeah, I can see why this probably brought up all sorts of things to talk about. But it felt so gay. I'm like, why am I crying about Buffy?
I cried. This is really gay too. I just realized another gay thing of the week. I cried because I was so happy being at a drag show on Fire Island. So I was, Tina Burner, put some respect on Tina Burner's name, a drag queen from the latest season of RuPaul's Drag Race, got a terrible edit, in my opinion. Was like an older, more seasoned queen compared to like the more like Gen Z, like fashion, beauty stars, you know, but like such an amazing performer, put on such a good show and did all that jazz, did had her drag daughters, they had performances interwoven, like one would go up, the other would go up, they'd bring each other back up again throughout. And one did Satisfied from Hamilton, which is like,
is that what made you cry?
Such a good choice. Yeah, so we were, I was looking around, we're all scream singing, which we can now hear in my voice. I cried because I was having so much fun watching Tina Burner and her drag daughters, The Real Egypt and Yasmin, killed it. I was just, I don't know, I've been deprived of good drag, I guess, over the last couple of years.
Well, yeah, especially with COVID. And I mean, I would imagine that going to Fire Island to witness this, it was like when I went to the Vatican for the first time, you know.
Absolutely.
It's just your faith takes you to
take me to church.
To that place. Yeah. Well, so much gayness there, but let's take it on the road, because today we are diking out with Naomi McPherson about the road. You know them from the band Muna, who is going out on tour with Phoebe Bridgers. Oh my God. And Muna will be playing in festivals around the country in the coming months. Let's get to it. Woo! Naomi, thank you so much for taking time out of your recording schedule to dike out with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. I'm happy to get some time away and be a little distracted. It's good.
Yeah, the best emails we get when we reach out to people trying to schedule are when they say, things are crazy right now, I'm making something new, because we're fans of your work. So we're like, great. Don't let us get in the way of that.
No, I think it's a happy balance, right? Like it's nice to be like deep in the zone and then also kind of step out and get some perspective. And we in my band, we call it like cleaning your ears. So like you have to clean your ears a little bit.
Are you in LA right now?
Yeah, I've been here since college. It's leaf blower o'clock. So I'll be mindful of, yeah, it's like every morning is leaf blower o'clock, but here in LA.
Is there anything to blow? I feel like
dirt, like yeah, just blow dirt around. I don't know. It's really, it seems pretty ridiculous. Also, they're just like always street sweeping and the streets are always still dirty. So I don't really know what's going on, but.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Same with New York. It's like, yeah, no matter how much garbage they pretend to pick up, it's just still exponentially garbage. More every time. Where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from San Diego. So
in San Diego. Yeah. So you're California. Okay.
I can't because seem
I,
to get out of
I
here.
I thought but that you were an LA person. You have kind of this cool LA vibe.
Oh, thank you.
But then when you said that it was just college that you moved there, but you were San Diego to LA. So
it's
not
similar.
Huge.
It's like, yeah. Yeah, the Southern California of it all is definitely pretty consistent across the two cities. I think I'm just a little bit more like, I don't know. I definitely have a little bit more of like a San Diego sort of like grimy San Diego, yeah, sort of like perspective. Maybe that's a little bit different than LA. A little bit more like skate, surf, like thrash, hardcore,
yeah,
punk kind of vibe.
Growing up in Connecticut, I really just was convinced I wanted to move to. I wish I lived in San Diego. It was all because we all wore PacSun at the time, and I was, yep, like, I just got to get on some kind of a board, like a surfboard, yeah, a skateboard, just to like justify all this etnies I'm wearing.
For sure. Oh, definitely. Listen, I'm going to start wearing Volcom again. Like, I'm going to start. Yeah. I'm getting the like big Osiris sneakers back.
Yes.
Let's see if they have my size.
And San Diego, one of the few cities in the country with a lesbian bar.
So, yeah.
What's it called? I have no
Gossip
idea.
Grill?
Oh, okay.
Gossip Grill.
Yeah. I'm literally wearing the Lesbian Bar Project shirt.
But, oh, there you go.
Yeah. Well, all the names listed on the back.
Oh, cool. You know, I want to ask you questions about this at some point because it's sort of a band goal of me and Katie and Joe, my bandmates, to open up like a queer non-cis men bar. And yeah, at some point, like that would be the dream. So yeah,
yes.
I want to know more about that shirt.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's all the rage right now. The Lesbian Bar Project is inspiring people to open bars that are for queer humans. No, queer humans.
We gotta land on a good
like umbrella
name. Yeah, like I just heard the other day,
like
A B C D, like anything but cis dudes.
ABCD. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that works. That works too. That's good.
Yeah. Well, if planning a future queer bar isn't it, what is the gayest thing you did this week?
I think other than like not go out anywhere, which seems pretty gay, like not doing anything, like
then
staying
I'm
home.
Flaming. Then I'm
I know.
Flaming.
Love, yeah, love there is that
something.
Answer.
There's something about that. So that's my first answer is not going out or doing anything at all outside of my house and like hang out with my like bandmates and my girlfriend. That's pretty much all I do.
Everyone was gay in 2020. 2020 yeah. made everyone gay by that standard.
Yeah, the gayest year ever for sure. But I also have a group of friends, and it's like all, for lack of a better word, dykes, like a couple non-binary people and some lesbies and some lovely bi girls as well, and we all get together and watch The Bachelorette and The Bachelor.
Yes.
So, and then we just like kind of hate, I don't know, it's not a hate watch because we do enjoy it, but we're just like screaming and talking on top of each other.
I'm right there with
like,
you.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. So that maybe that would be in terms of like the mass of people.
This fascinates me because for me as a gay woman, I was always having an aversion to The Bachelorette. So
same.
I didn't think that queer people other than gay men watched The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Because as we know, gay men love when women are messy, when straight women are messy. It's the two go hand in hand. So I just thought, nobody who's queer and not a man watches The Bachelor. And then I keep finding out more and more people do it because it pains me to see all those women acting stupid on behalf of some potato head.
Yeah,
know?
Well, it's always, I think this is, well, The Bachelorette, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other with both of the like types in the series because with The Bachelorette, it's like one woman and all these men who are terrible for the most part. They all suck. And then it's kind of like one shitty guy and a bunch of women who are way better than him.
Right.
Either way, it's kind of just a weird situation. But I think, I don't know, there's something fascinating about it. I really was not a reality TV person at all. I didn't like grow up having any kind of, I didn't know that there was like another channel other than PBS until I was probably like 10. So I had no clue like what was on TV. And then I was never really like into watching reality TV until a couple of friends of mine were like, who are just like gay people were like, we're watching The Bachelor. Like you should come. It's fun. And then I think maybe it's like, I try to think as to why we enjoy it. Cause some people that I know who are queer as well and, or queer women, like hate it and don't enjoy it. But I interrogate why I like it so much. And I think maybe it's that I guess maybe there's a bit of like Schadenfreude in it. And that maybe there's a bit of like just a curiosity about like heterosexual life that I just have no, like I was never a part of it.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. So it's kind of like, it's kind of like straight, like people watching,
it's
like
anthropological. That's what I say
research
to justify it.
every time. Good for you interrogating why you watch it. I don't. I watch it blindly and I enjoy it. And
I interrogate it for about 2.5 seconds and I'm like, no, he needs to get off the show because he's playing games and like getting fully into it. So
here's what's happening now with Bachelor Nation, though. The guys, like the Bachelorette, is becoming way more woke than the Bachelor. Like, for some reason, it used to always be a bunch of like buffoons, no matter what franchise, but you're getting a lot more emotionally mature men in this season and last. And then, but we're still getting like infantilized or just like not mature, petty, like fights, like the same old from the girls. So that's where I'm getting annoyed. Like, if we're going to have all these men in touch with their feelings and trauma, like, we're getting really emotionally mature. I keep saying that term. I'm thinking of some
other. It's true, though. For this season, guys. It feels true, yeah.
Yeah. So
I agree with you. We'll see. Is kind of The Bachelor is a bit more consistently a mess. And it was just like, not to get into it, because we don't have to talk about it, but it's the girl who's The Bachelorette now, people ganged up on her last season of The Bachelor because she was calling out bullying. And then everyone was like basically calling her a snitch. And it was just so weird. Yeah. But I think she did the right thing. This series has to get a bit nicer. I think hopefully it will. We'll see. But I don't know. So far, I'm enjoying it so far. I also like Paradise.
I was going to say, getting ready. I heard Paradise. It's the wildest one yet. I mean, they always say that, but people are coming out of a quarantine super horny and
I like that.
Chaotic. We'll see. I love
it. It's like Love
It Island gave us Demi, a bisexual contestant. Come on.
She's iconic. I love her. I like those kind of shows where it's just like, it's just people on vacation getting drunk. And then like watching that now or like watching my bandmate and her girlfriend, and they like to watch Love Island. So I've kind of been watching that. And I'm like, I don't know if I could do it, but I wonder if I would have fun. Like, if I was a straight person, if I would go and have fun, because it does seem like kind of fun. Like, you go, if you have a decent attitude, I don't know. I don't really drink, but like they drink, they hang out by the pool.
Yeah.
They play games.
Love Island actually, it limits their drinking. So you get,
that's good.
Really?
So in the US with The Bachelor, they pump it down their throats. Blackout. Just to get them as crazy and chaotic as possible. But I've heard on Love Island, there's actually a limit to how much they can drink. That's why they have a lot more coherent conversations and self-reflection, I guess. But that's why they get so excited when they have a party night on Love Island. They do those like slow motion, like, because they're actually excited that they get to drink a little more than they're normally allotted. That's why they're so happy.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't know that. I figured because they're Brits that they kind of were just pounding it back. Brits I know have a real talent.
Yeah.
Right. For partying. But,
you know, I just realized that the only reality show I've ever wanted to be on was The Real World. And I think that's because that was the only space where queer people existed on reality TV for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Like,
that makes sense.
I would never even think of possibly going for any of those other shows, because it does just seem like this heteronormative hellscape, and
it is, without a doubt.
I did watch a full episode of The Bachelor finally, and it was the season premiere of, I think, the last season, whatever was happening in like January, February.
Yeah,
Claire.
I don't know. It was more cringe than anything I've ever watched. I think it's just like my own discomfort of just, what are these women doing? But
yeah. Also, if you want to watch like bad male style, like bad male clothing choices, the Bachelor and Bachelorette franchise is really incredible. It's like a lot of revealed ankle.
I was going to say, not a sock ankle, in sight. Not a sock
in sight. Like your disgusting feet in like an ugly, like Oxford shoe with just a revealed ankle, like 6 inches of revealed ankle. It's really wild. Yeah.
Love it.
Love it and hate it. It's both. But I like it.
I love that you do it, though, as a group with other queers. There's something so much fun about watching stuff, especially with a group of queer people, that makes everything better.
Definitely. We also went to go see Fast and the Furious, and that was a similar experience of like, this feels like straight camp. We were like, whatever that, I don't know what that is, but this is like what I imagine straight camp would be. And my like morbid fascination with that.
That's probably the best description of that franchise.
It is kind of what it feels like. It's just like, it's very, it's, yeah, it's just complete over the top, like, hetero, cis, straight camp. Very enjoyable for me to watch as someone who can't relate in any way.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your music and what you do. For any listeners who aren't familiar, you're part of the band Muna. Incredible music.
Thank you very much.
Our listeners are familiar. Asking us to have like many the band of them on.
Yeah. And we're
logistically, we would love to have the band on, but like to record a podcast.
One at a time. We can get the other ones on here. I'm sure they would like to. We all, the three of us have a podcast together, so we're like all down to talk shit and just go crazy.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Wait, what's your podcast called?
It's
How'd I miss
the
this?
Dumbest. Please, like, I honestly don't even know if I can recommend listening to it, but it's fun for us to do. Our management was just like, y'all are funny in interviews. Like, people seem to get a kick out of you. You should just make a podcast. And then in COVID, in early COVID, we were like, or not early COVID, sorry. Like, at the beginning of this year, it still feels like, I mean, how long have we been?
Right.
You know, like, what's all time? A big blur. But yeah, we started a podcast called Gayotic, which is because, so that it's self-explanatory. It has no form or concept or anything. But yeah, there's a few episodes of that up.
Love it.
Yeah. That's fun. But I'm also in a recording band. Mainly we do music.
Yes.
Yeah. Other than hanging out and talking, we do music.
You got together in college.
Yeah. Yeah. We met at school. I was in we went to USC, which was just like a bizarre sort of another kind of like cis hetero, very like, I don't know. It's like a very fratty school. And we met there because we were like some of the only people who like looked like us, and we were like, oh, okay, like you seem cool, and like that's kind of how you like made friends there, if you were a little bit like, for lack of a better word, alternative, or like different from the general population of the school. But yeah, so we met at school, and then we started making music my like junior year of college. And then I think towards the end of that year, we were like, we kind of felt that we understood how to like put it out in that time period. It was a very like blog heavy sort of like music industry. And we were kind of into that as consumers. And we were like, we just have to like get on blogs. Like, we could just be our own PR people and what, like, we just make our own artwork and just market ourselves and try and do that. And then we did that and it kind of worked. So then we, got signed, and we've been doing that for our job ever since, which is really crazy, but really cool.
Love it. Were you all queer when you first got together? Like, did you all know that? Yeah. Were you out?
Yes. Yes, we were all, I think we weren't all out as like, as queer as we are now in terms of, I guess, like, I was,
sure, it's a journey.
I was, yeah. I wasn't obviously like out in terms of my gender identity at the time.
Right.
Katie and I actually dated. We met in class, and then she and I were talking after class one day, and she was like, what do you do like other than school? And I was like, I don't know. I'm here for like academic reasons, but I play guitar and I do other stuff. And she was like, oh, cool, you can be my band. And then like 9 months later, a year later, we did end up starting a band. I think she was kidding at the time, but yeah, we were dating, and then she met Joe through class, because they were both in music school. They were in like the music program there. So, and then I think she had kind of like sniped Joe as being a queer person too, and was like,
yeah,
we'll be friends. And then, yeah, it kind of like went off from there. But it was interesting. We talk about it a lot now in the sense of like not really thinking that we have that many, like that big of like a queer community here in LA. And then we think about like all of our friends, we're like, all of our friends are gay. So I guess we do. But yeah, I think Katie kind of encouraged us to be more out and encouraged us to label ourselves as a queer band. She was like, it's fine. Like, it doesn't, people don't care anymore. And I think this was around the time that like St. Vincent was kind of rumored to be queer, but wasn't out. And we were kind of like, oh man, maybe people are not out because of like, it's like a strategy thing. Like, within the music industry, you don't want to be pigeonholed or whatever. And then Kate was like, nah, you got to just like, it's going to be smart for us to do that. And now like, literally years, as the years progressed, it kind of was like more and more artists started being like openly queer in the way that they started, like, I don't know, releasing music as with that as a part of their narrative. And yeah, so
right,
she was smart to do that. But
yeah, I feel like music is a great place to be queer. I mean, any place is a great place, but in terms of if you compare it to other performing arts like acting, I can see why people are a little bit more hesitant because you are more likely to get like pigeonholed with roles, but it's not like, oh, they're only going to book you for Lilith Fair. One, Lilith Fair doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Two, like good music is good music.
Yeah, totally. I think we talk about it a lot now as sort of being like, we're at a bit of an interesting place in how like queerness is being commodified and becoming like a commodifiable asset within like one's participation in capitalism. So it's like, you kind of want to be careful. Whereas in the beginning, it was more of a fear of like not being able to reach like the success level that we wanted to get to and still want to get to. Because of being out and not being like a hindrance. Whereas now it kind of feels like, oh man, you kind of have to be careful, like how much of your identity you're monetizing and like, and how you talk about it, or just like be conscious of how you talk about it publicly because you don't want it. Yeah. I don't know. It's very complicated.
Yeah. Having to think about all that. I did also just see a tweet that went viral, I think, that was something about Muna touring with Phoebe Bridgers feels like it was made up as a joke, like
to make fun of lesbians. Yeah, I love that tweet. That's so funny.
So funny. Yeah, congratulations on that tour, selling out in seconds. Right, seconds.
Really crazy. I mean, Phoebe's so fast. Just the best. She's so iconic. So I'm happy. We're happy to just be tagging along and happy to see her like get all the success that she deserves because she's awesome. So
yeah,
I was just watching her on Z-Way.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched that yet. I need to, though. Z-Way is the funniest, so I haven't watched the show yet. I've been waiting for like a concentrated amount of time. But she did get snubbed for the Emmys. I saw.
She did.
I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Phoebe's cool. We're excited to get on the road. It'll be interesting.
When is the last time you were on the road as a band?
2019, like fall of 2019. I think we were... It was odd because like we had kind of just started our second record cycle, as it were, like, which is like, I guess the year after you release a record, you kind of plan to spend touring, and we put it out in September, and then by, you know, we were making plans for the summer of the next year. And then obviously by spring, like everything got kind of shut down. But I think the last thing that we did was like like November of 2019, the last like real tour that we were on. So it'll be really fascinating to get back and see you if we can survive it. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like getting back into that mindset? Cause I know for comedians, we're all just like, I don't know, like people are bringing their notebooks on stage and just like, sue me. There was a pandemic, you know, like just trying to like get that muscle back. Is it similar for music? Is it?
And also maybe scared to make plans that are like 3 months out.
Yeah.
It's a combination of that.
Variance like, and all.
Totally. Yeah, I'm afraid to plan shows out of state or like plan for West Coast dates because I'm like, I don't know.
I think we're kind of like at this point just being like, I guess we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's definitely in terms of COVID, I had a really very, very, very insular and cautious year of COVID. So to be going out and touring is definitely a bit of a mind fuck for me in terms of like how safe or unsafe I will feel in theory. But I think a lot of musicians aren't alone in, you know, I'm not alone in feeling that. This to say like a lot of musicians obviously are probably thinking and feeling this and just like try not to be too worried, but definitely weird. And also like in terms of just not having toured for so long, I was talking with Joe the other day and we were like, I don't remember how to play these songs. Like I need to learn everything again. Yeah. Like once you're touring, you can just like not phone it in, but you have it in the grooves of your brain as sort of like the default and you can just play through a set and have fun. And I think for the first couple of shows, it's going to be stressful. And we're also playing like, we're theoretically playing like at least a new song. So we will have to learn how to play all the music again. It'll be interesting.
Right. let's talk about touring in terms of being a queer person, a non-binary person who's out on the road. Do you have different levels of anxiety in different cities based on, oh, is it okay to be me here? And being POC,
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it feels nice at least to travel with like, we have like, this sounds very silly, but we've always toured with like the little group of us. So it's never just me. And I don't feel alone in that. And we have some big, huge men who like work with us. So it's like, it's nice to have them around to like, if we are feeling a bit like shifty or strange, just knowing that like, there's that, it feels very elementary to have to like think of things in that way. Think of your own like physical safety in that way, but it's nice having them around in certain places. I think the most strange things that we've experienced kind of just feel like really feeling like you're sticking out like a sore thumb, like at a gas station or like eating at picking up food at a restaurant. But a lot of the cities that we play in feel like they're, at least on our headline tours, it's like we might be in like a state that I would normally not like go to visit, but we're in like a very college town sort of like liberal atmosphere. And if they're coming to our show, they're obviously fine with gay. So I'm not like too worried about it, but yeah, it can get iffy. I've had some strange experiences. Our former bass player is also, he's mixed, half black like me. And we would just feel like so bizarre in certain places. I think probably him even more so, because he's like a tall dude with an afro. He's amazing. His name's Brian. But I think we would feel like, whoa, this is a really white place, or like, whoa, we're in the rural South at this like truck stop, and it feels pretty crazy. So that can get, it can get a bit weird, but
yeah.
The truck stops and the gas stations.
I was going to say, it's always the gas stations, even in New York State.
Upstate New York can get crazy.
Oh yeah. I've seen some
I was just
up.
Driving to Buffalo with my wife, and we pulled over in this small town, and I'm like, I don't even want to get out of the car with you. Like, let's go in separately. I don't want people to know we're together. I'm getting
for
weird
sure.
vibes here.
It's funny that like, it seems like a lot of people's perceptions, at least of like, I'm sure you guys are aware because you travel and stuff, but a lot of people are like, oh man, aren't you scared to go to like whatever state in the South? And then I'm like, no, I'm scared to go to like outside of Pittsburgh. Like, the Northeast can get real weird, like in certain areas. It's just always the rural towns where you're kind of like, oh man, like people are just looking at us a little bit funny, but thank goodness never had any like super like harrowing experience, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it.
Well, speaking of harrowing experiences, I read Carrie Brownstein's book when it came out, and I don't know if you're familiar. She wrote about Tor in such a way that makes me so fascinated. So like, it seemed like there were high highs and such low lows. Was any of that relatable? Just there was seemed like it had such a strain on her and her mental health. Is there stuff you have to do to like self-preserve and make sure like your head's on straight? And I don't know. It felt so dark reading her recount of touring.
It can get dark. I think it can get dark. I, the saving grace really always has been the fact that like me and Katie and Joe are so close and such good friends, and like we are like constantly like one of us is like, I don't know, we're like, it's constantly rotating like who's having like a bad time, and I think we hold a lot of space for like each other's emotions on the road, so that feels helpful. And like we don't really like fight or it doesn't really get like dramatic between the three of us, which is, I feel so, so lucky, because I know that like being in a band for people is really, can be really, really exhausting. And I just feel like I'm in a very fortunate sort of circumstance where like we've just been through so much together that it really feels like a pretty safe emotional unit in that sense. But it can definitely get dark, 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 dark on tour for sure. It depends on also the level to which, the level at which you're traveling, I think has a lot to do with it. Like, we were on a bus for our headline tour, and which was amazing, like, cuz you're not driving for 16 hours. Like, we spent like years and years and years, and we're going to do it again this fall with Phoebe, just cuz it's a short run, but like in a van with all your merch like falling on top of you, trying to get any sleep that you can, but you're like fully upright, your knees hurt cuz you're just like shoved into a car, everyone's taking turns driving, you're driving on like scary ass ice and like through fog, and you can't see anything. And like, none of us are professional drivers. Like, we're just like, you know, kind of winging it and trying to make it work. But it can definitely get, I think the physical strain on your body that it takes is, it ages you a lot. Like tour ages you several years, like after you come back from a run, just because it's physically super grueling. One of the only things we try to do to like keep our heads on straight is like, we try to eat healthy. And like, that I think can help a lot, because it's so easy to fall into a pattern of like eating super late at night, and like and like it just makes you feel a bit like not yourself in your body. So I think we try to like do a lot of smoothies, find like the best smoothie place in every like city that we go to, and like try to live a reasonably like sober, healthy lifestyle. Like, we don't party on the road at all, and we're like, right after the gig, we're going to bed. So it's just about like trying to keep your body healthy, because when you start to get run down, you'll get sick, and then you'll hate playing shows. So it can get grueling though, for sure. It's an intense experience. It's really intense.
It always blows my mind how people don't do it sober.
I don't understand
the people who do like a lot of how do you do it. It's so grueling if you're being healthy, that if you're not, unless that just kind of floats you through it in this like half conscious state.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I don't know. I would assume a lot of people just getting into their music, I don't know, maybe their first tour would party more. That's just
how I
would
imagine.
Well, I think there's, I think like that is like the common perception and stereotype. And I still find it so crazy when people are like, we've toured with people who are like drinking every night after a show. And like, when you're on the road for 2 months, it's like, I can't imagine being hungover and having to play a show. Like I just can't imagine it. And luckily we have like some sober people in our like touring group. So I think it slowly sort of just encouraged everyone to be like, we're just like, we just don't do that. We don't have time. We have to drive after the show for 6 hours. Like, we're not going to like go to a bar. We don't have time. So I think even as the tour situation has gotten a little like cushier, it's been nice to kind of keep the sober vibe. Occasionally, like we'll have, if we're in New York for like 5 days, we're going to see our friends and like try to have a time and like go to a museum and like, I don't know, try to do things that aren't about playing the show but that also like feel good for your body. Like, just trying to like go to a museum, go see a movie, just try and keep your head on straight. That's what we like. Go to like the cultural center of whatever city that we're in and try to like go look at like antiques or something and not party. We're very boring, to be honest, but I think it is why we can like tour with and still be able to sing like at the end of the run.
Right.
It can get really gnarly if you don't, for sure.
Yeah.
You just get sick, which sucks.
How do you manage your romantic relationships when you're on the road?
That's an amazing question. I mean, I feel like if someone is in a relationship with a touring musician, they are in a long distance relationship, like kind of off and on for the duration of the relationship. So I think you kind of do just have to get used to making time in your days to like do what you would do in a long distance relationship. Like, FaceTiming, like trying to call as much as you can and like check in and be available via text if you're able to, or it's really just stuff like that that has been the most like consistently useful. But I think it can get hard for sure, especially like if you're dating someone who's also in a creative field and your paths are kind of like crossing at the wrong juncture. I think that's happening for me this fall. Like, I think I'm leaving for tour and then my girlfriend leaves for tour. I mean, not for tour, for a shoot. So she's going to be gone for like the tail end of my thing.
And past guest of the podcast.
Yeah. Past guest of the pod. She's like going to be gone on a shoot when I'm back. So just a little bit of two ships passing in the night, but I think, you just try to like make time when you can and just be considerate of the other person if they're the one also like obviously staying home. But if they're doing work if they're off doing work as well or traveling, I think you just kind of have to accept that things are going to get a little like hectic in terms of the communication.
Yeah. And on the flip side, have you ever been single on the road?
Yeah, I have. But there's no time to do anything. Like you just don't have time to, I don't know. I just like,
you're not checking Tinder in the different cities you land in, or
I think maybe there was a period of time where I can't even remember. I think like I don't think I ever have. I don't think I ever have. I think I've been on the road when I've been like a bit heartsick before. Mm. So maybe I wasn't in the right like space to be like, fuck it, I'm going to like try and like score on tour. But also I think, just like, oh man, just like finding the time to be able to like give someone a pleasant experience with you on tour just sounds really kind of somewhat impossible. Cause I don't know. I just think I'm maybe not the most like dateable person when I'm on the road, at least in terms of meeting someone, just because shit gets so busy and you're waking up at like 4 a.m. just like, you're probably not in the greatest headspace to date, but I'm sure in a very cushy sort of situation, it could be fun.
Like, do fans approach you or your bandmates like trying to hit on you, or
they have?
It has happened. it has happened. We have like a strict boundary of just like, not happening. No, love you.
Right.
You're amazing. Because a lot of them are also quite young. So we're just like, no.
Right.
But people, I think what is interesting about that kind of, I don't know, like, I think when you're a musician, especially when you're like, I can't really speak for her, but like when you're the lead singer and lyricist of a band, people feel like they can really emotionally, like they know you really well.
Yeah.
If your lyrics are like super emotionally raw. And I think that there's like a kind of sense of intimacy that gets based on that. And then there a lot of people like project sort of like ideas onto you as people. To be honest, a lot of the experiences that we have with fans are like really, really nice. And people giving us like letters talking about how like our songs are helpful to them, or like our songs are, or, you know, have like guided them through experiences in their own lives, or helped them grieve the loss of a family member, or like a really bad breakup, like something like that. So a lot of the communication that we have with fans, like after shows when people are approaching us, is mostly about that, for people to like, you know, say really, really kind things about the music. But there are times when people are a little bit inappropriate, but I think it's rare. It's more rare these days, for sure. I think people know us well enough now to know that like what we're down to chat about. And yeah, usually people are really nice and totally not weird.
I can't get over it. I mean, you said it a while back, but you said you're like asleep standing up. That was a exaggeration. Like I just realized I don't know what a tour bus is like and the sleeping situation. And I'm like, you're not actually.
Oh no.
Can you walk me through a tour bus?
Yes. Well, the bus rocks. Mostly what I'm talking about is like the van, like van life.
Oh, the van. Okay. Van versus van tour bus. Okay.
Van life is like what most people, I mean, the cost of a bus for a tour is just astronomical. So I think unless you're like real, if you're really reeling it in on tour, you get like a private gig, it makes it easier for people to like get a bus to, because you have to pay the driver and they drive all night and it's like a whole thing. So usually most people, if you're not cash flush yet, you are touring in like a Ford passenger van, or if you're lucky, in a Sprinter van.
Sprinter. Yeah. Okay.
But the Sprinter, yeah, you'll be like, you can't recline your chair because there's like merch behind you. So you're like kind of just trying to sleep with like a neck pillow on. It's like sleeping on an airplane. It's kind of what it feels like. But the bus is awesome. The bus is like, is beds. You have like a little bunk. You have a little pocket in your bunk where you can like put all your stuff, your phone. There's like a little light. You're sleeping like above and below your friends. Like you could, I don't know. We like play little pranks on each other on the bus. It is like summer camp in a certain way. Like it can be fun.
Like what? I love a prank story.
Yeah, we were touring with this girl, Chelsea Jade. She's an amazing musician from New Zealand. She's just so funny. I don't know. Kiwis are really funny. So she just was always making us laugh. But our drummer and tour manager is this guy named Scott. And he's very like a straight-laced. We know him from school as well. And he's just like a very like on top of it, straight-laced, kind of level-headed, cool dude, never gets upset. And like, I think people just wanted to get to him at a certain point, like just because he feels like un-get-to-able. And we put like, someone bought like a skeleton from like a Walmart and like would put it in his bunk so that when he would like open his bunk, there'd be like a skeleton. There'd be like a tucked in skeleton in his bunk. Just like stupid shit like
classic.
That. Like,
yeah.
Just like trying to film people doing like dumb stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
You do like milkshake night. Joe organized a milkshake night where she made milkshakes for everyone. It was like, it is like summer camp at a certain point for sure on the bus. In the van, you're like, it's like, feels like being on a plane for a month. It can be pretty grueling, but.
Gotcha. Okay. What's your favorite city to play in?
It's interesting. I think obviously it's fun to play in LA and New York simply because we like have friends in those places and family and all these things. And it's like, it's nice to play venues that like mean something to us. Like when we've opened for people at like the Greek, and playing the Greek is really crazy just because it's like, it means something to you, or playing like Radio City, like it's like a venue that means something to you and like your cultural imagination. But a lot of the times the most fun cities to play are like random cities in the Midwest. Like Columbus, Ohio is always a good time. Kansas City is always a good time. Oddly, Salt Lake is a good time. I mean, people, I think in these sort of college towns in slightly less densely populated states are really hungry for live music and actually like music. And they just go fucking crazy at shows. They just go crazy. And it's just really fun. It just seems like people are really happy to be there. As in, I think LA and New York and like other big cities around the world kind of feel like there are some like industry people with their arms crossed, sort of like, you know.
A little too cool.
A little bit too cool to like be having a good time. And then, people in like Columbus and Kansas City are like watching that crazy.
Yeah.
It's actually really fun to play in Chicago as well. Chicago's really a fun city for us.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember growing up in Connecticut, there wasn't like too much around. I would have to like go to Boston or New York to go to shows.
Yeah.
And the ones, if a band would come to like a smaller venue in Connecticut, it would be so much more fun compared to a venue in like Manhattan. I remember literally going to see a band and like Mary Kay Olsen was there, like just like, and something about seeing her there like bummed me out. Like, she was just like on her phone and not excited. And I was like, man,
yeah,
I'd rather be in the middle of nowhere in like Connecticut right now.
Yeah, you just kind of feel, it's like underdog scenes. I don't know. There's something, there's something to that that feels really good when you're playing the shows as well. All of the UK is amazing as well. Like, I can't fault any city in the UK for anything. Like, we did a UK tour. They go crazy at shows. They like new music a lot. So I think they're maybe a little bit more open listeners than people in the States, or they just get, I don't know, maybe it's something about the time zones. They're just like a bit ahead on things. So all of our shows there feel really, really fun.
What about other European cities?
The only time that we've toured Europe was when we were opening in 2017, we were opening for Harry Styles. So obviously all of those shows were insane. Like, I can't compare them to anything because it was just like it was like a completely different universe that we got to step into for like 5 minutes.
Even imagine the level of craziness.
It was awesome. They were awesome.
Like, the fans are nuts, certifiably insane, and half of them based on Twitter. Based on my experiences of the fandom.
As far as how we were received as an opening band, people were like jumping up and down, shaking the venue. Like when we played in Paris, like
that's
people
amazing.
Were just going insane. And they probably had no idea who we are. And they were just so, I think they were like
that's
hyped,
great.
Obviously, that he was going to play. And it was his first tour ever. And it was just like a big deal for them as like not new fans of his, but like his new direction was very different than what he had sort of like come from doing. And I think they were just fucking stoked. So all the all the European shows that we played with him were like out of control. They were very, very kind to us, and they danced like crazy, and like it was really, really cute. Yeah, we had a fabulous time on that tour for sure. It was definitely
awesome.
A wild experience, but honestly, we got a lot of time on that tour to also just like enjoy cities because we were opening, so you have like a little bit less time on stage. It'll probably be a little bit like that in this fall with Phoebe opening, because you're only playing for like maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, so like you kind of get a lot more time to enjoy your surroundings. So our European opening tour with him kind of felt like we also like were on a little bit of a small vacation. So we got to like really enjoy a lot of cities that I had never been to. And it was really, really cool. I didn't travel a lot as like a young person.
I was just going
to
ask that. Yeah. Because that would motivate me. I'm like, I'm going to make it big and stand up just so I can tour and travel. Because I didn't get to travel that much as a kid. Like, that's got to be a big perk of it. There's time.
Definitely. I mean, I feel so lucky all the time to like be, I come from like a musical family. So like a lot of my family are jazz musicians. So I think it was like partially inherent, but it's like a hard career to like make money in and do professionally without like stress. And I feel like I live a relatively sort of stress-free lifestyle in terms of like, I feel very supported, and I feel like I have I exceeded the expectations that I had for us. I think we've kind of exceeded them when we're always setting like new standards. But I think a big motivating factor, or what makes you feel really grateful when you're there, maybe it's not the origin of the motivation, but when you're there, like when you're in Europe, you're just like, man, like I never traveled as a kid. I didn't have money growing up. And like, now I'm in Stockholm. Like, that is just insane.
Yeah.
So super, super cool, gratifying experience for sure.
When you open for these headliners, do you get to spend a lot of time with them, or is it pretty separate because you have different teams and whatnot, and you just kind of pass each other on stage?
It varies across the tour, because a lot of the time you don't spend all that much time just because everyone is so busy. And usually, like if you're opening, you're chasing someone who's on a bus, so they're like in the next city way before you are, because like you're in a little van, like kind of just chasing them down. But you have to sleep at night, so there are some times when you get to like hang out backstage or like hang out at catering or you make time to like hang out or have a time somewhere. Some bands that we've toured with, we will have like one night on the tour where like nobody has to do anything the next day. So we'll like go, we're like in Montreal and we'll go get like poutine or something. We did that with this band Group Love, and like we would hang out with them in that way. Or we just hang out backstage before and after the show, like while we're just like, you know, getting changed backstage, saying hi, hanging out a little bit. But usually it's like everyone's so busy that it's kind of a bit hectic.
Is it more exciting for you to open in a crowd that maybe isn't familiar with you? Like, okay, they're there to see Harry Styles, but you win them over, versus playing a crowd that you already know is like baked in. They love your music. They're here for you.
It depends. I think they both feel good in different ways. Like playing our headline shows is awesome and so fun because people know every word and they are very, very devoted fans. So them singing it back to you just feels like, God, I'm living like in some kind of bizarre dream. It just makes you feel like really grateful. But then I think you can maybe let loose a little bit when you're on it, doing an opening slot, because the stakes are a little bit lower in certain ways. Like, if maybe a lot of people on the Phoebe tour won't really know our music, that, I mean, maybe they will, but maybe they won't. And if you go out on stage and you're like, we're just going to play like our most exciting songs to listen to for the next half an hour, and it's going to go by like that, and hopefully people are like dancing along and hanging out and having a good time by the end of the set. And usually it happens because I think we're a good and fun live band to listen to. I think a lot of like our ethos in the project was to like make the live sound a little different from the record, in the sense of like, we want it to feel like you're at a rock show. Like, we want you to feel like you're not just listening back to the album exactly as you heard it. Like, you're listening to a live band playing like loud music. So I think, we usually tend to win people over, and that does feel kind of satisfying when you walk off and you're like, you're going to be at the next headline show that we play in the city. And that is cool. So
hell yeah.
Right.
It's all satisfying worthwhile.
Being in the audience, too. Like, I love when I go to a show to see one person and then I get to become a fan of somebody else in the process.
No, that's totally.
That's how great. I discovered Mitski. Like it's, I love it.
Where'd you see Mitski? We love her. She's so awesome.
I saw her open for someone at Lincoln Hall in Chicago years back.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's so rad. Yeah, she's awesome. I'm sure she put on a crazy opening set.
It was
she's
amazing.
So fucking cool.
I was like jaw dropped. Yeah, walked out, Googled immediately. Lifelong
That's
fan.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing sort of happens as like, I find myself going to a lot of like comedy shows, and then sometimes the people I don't know on the lineup are some of the funniest people, and then I'm like stoked to have been there to see them too.
I was going to say, looking at your social media and the band's social media this morning, I'm like, are they comedians too? Like, you just, you guys read like a lot of my friends.
Oh, really?
I mean, you guys seem like comics.
Our friend Caleb always says musicians want to be comedians and comedians just want to be musicians.
Yeah.
And it totally makes sense. And we are definitely like, I don't know. We'll do anything for like attention feels good. So like whatever it takes.
Any form.
But I think we just like to talk shit and be funny on Twitter. And like, I don't know. I like tweeting on a personal level. So I find myself sort of like, people will like see my tweet and be like, oh, I know you from that band. And I like your band. And then I'll be like, I like your comedy or whatever. And then we'll sort of become like online homies, which is cool. And yeah, definitely fun. And maybe it's because, I don't know, the three of us are all just like such, I don't know. We're very like emotional. I feel like comedians are very emotionally in touch people as well. So maybe there's a little bit of a kinship there.
I also, and maybe I'm biased, I think that queer people are funnier. So
no, that's true.
No, that's
when I think
fact.
Of all the musicians just true. That are the funniest when I go see them, it's always the queer ones.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Like Tegan and Sarah on stage to me is one of the most entertaining things for their banter alone.
They're
like,
it could
so just funny. Be them talking in between songs the whole time, and I'd be okay with that, even though I love their music as well.
Oh no, of course. I mean, they're the gods in this shit. They're just so I fucking love them, and we're lucky enough to be like slight like online homies with them. But I remember like growing up listening to their music and seeing videos of them playing and be like, God damn, they're funny. And like, they would do like little videos as a part of their album cycle or their recording cycle, and they'd be doing like little bits in them. And I don't know, they're just super funny. So yeah, there's something to that. Queer people, I don't know. Life is a joke when you're a queer person. I feel like you just feel like such an outsider, or you just grow up feeling so weird. And then you're like, everybody's pretty weird, I guess. And then, I don't know, maybe it gives you a good sense of, or you get bullied and it gives you a sense of humor. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
That's what it takes, yeah, to be a comedian, especially. Wait, now I need to know everyone's sign in the band.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you what? Well, okay. Well, I almost want you to guess, but I will tell you. I can break it down. If you really want charts too, I could break it down.
Oh my God. Well, we could do big threes.
I could give you big threes. I could give you big threes
on everyone.
I feel like
we've got water signs in the band.
We have one water sign in the band, but it's not who you would expect. But there are a lot of water in the charts.
Okay, it's not Katie's not a Cancer.
No, Katie's a Capricorn.
Whoa,
Katie's a Capricorn like me. Yeah.
We're both Capricorns.
Okay, great. Yeah, we get shit done.
Yeah,
that's like we're like, and what do we need to do to like get? Yeah, we get shit done for sure. Which is, I think, I don't know.
Amazing.
It's that
I didn't have you pegged for Capricorn.
Yeah.
I'm a Taurus rising, if that helps make anything clear, but
yeah, Taurus, I see. Okay. What's your big three then? We have Capricorn.
I'm a Capricorn. I'm a Taurus rising, and I have a Gemini moon, which is just fucked, but life is torture. So
I was going to ask if there's Gemini somewhere in there.
Unfortunately, yes. Oh, really? Wow.
Not that I hate. I know there's a lot of Gemini slander out there. My girlfriend's a Gemini, Taurus cusp.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I saw some of her in you. Okay.
That's interesting. Yeah. No, I feel like once people know me, they peg me as a Capricorn because I'm very like obsessed with work.
Yeah.
And like, I don't like to, and I don't know, I can be kind of outgoing, but I'm not the most outgoing social person in the world. And I don't know.
Selective.
Yeah, in a big social environment, I'm not like talking. But yeah.
I need to know Katie's just from a lyric standpoint.
She's a Pisces moon, which is okay. common for the poets and the songwriters.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay, yeah,
that's a common one. And she's Gemini rising, which makes sense when you meet her. So we have we have similar charts, but just like messed up.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Joe.
And then Joe's a Pisces.
Okay.
Joe's like very emotionally in touch, and yeah, she's great. But and she's a Taurus rising like me, so maybe we get along. We're both just like stupid, so I don't know, maybe like why we bond. Definitely stubborn. Definitely a lot of stubborn vibes in the band. We're very like, I think it's the DIY kind of ethos comes from thinking like we're also stubborn, that we're like, well, we will do it better than somebody else will, so let's just do it.
Oh, stubborn as a band too.
Yeah.
And not within the band. That's good.
No, yeah, like as a united front, like
that's great
most of the time.
With being in a band, I find that, like, especially with, I know it's true in comedy, when you're working with someone, it's not like a normal job in that you can keep things very separate, like, oh, this is just professional. Like, you three kind of have to be friends, right?
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that, being friends but also being coworkers?
Carolyn.
Melody and I are taking
asking for us.
Yeah, just some hot tips.
Just in theory.
I don't know. I think it's kind of always like a moving. We're just like so close that I feel like it does feel like a bit familial at a certain point. Yeah. And we definitely fight like family a lot of the time. And we kind of like, we tend to be able to get over stuff quick. So that's helpful in terms of like, I guess, addressing conflict within the band. I don't know. I think like the friendship and the work kind of all happened around the same time. I don't know. Like Katie and I were like seeing each other and also working together at the same time. So maybe that's a Capricorn thing of like, we'll turn anything into like a business.
Yeah.
So like,
right. So, yeah. I mean, my wife and I met at work, and I've also, all of my exes except one were coworkers of mine. So.
I think if you like someone's work ethic, sorry, it says like a lot about, I don't know, like that's a really important thing for me. Like it's important for me to like respect people in what they do. And I think I respect Katie and Joe in what they do so much that it's like that having that sort of like foundation keeps everything on a relatively pretty even playing field in terms of like anything that might come up in the band. But yeah, I don't know. We fight sometimes, we cry, we've been to band therapy, which was honestly not very good. Okay. It was fine. It was free. So that was cool, I guess. But I think we all left being like, our therapist doesn't understand us. And then maybe it made us closer. But yeah, we there's so much love as the foundation. And we're so integral in each other's lives. Like, we will work all day and then hang out all night doing something else. So like, I think, yeah, we're just the best of friends. So it seems like when something comes up that's difficult, we can just address it because we just love each other so much and like also respect each other so much that it tends to be relatively kind of easy to balance the two, if that makes sense. That was kind of a rambling answer, but.
Oh no, that's great. Yeah, that's great. I'm now obsessed with band therapy. I'm just going to be Googling that for a while.
I think people
should
do it.
Are there band therapists out there, or like, do you just seek out like
We did it through this organization called Music Cares. It's kind of like a resource for people who are struggling with addiction in the music industry. I think that's what like it started as. But now they kind of have, it's like, it sort of opened up to be a bit more like, if you are a musician and you chip a tooth like on stage or something, you can go to like via Music Cares, maybe like to a dentist who will like fix your tooth or something like that.
Oh,
and
then
add
oh,
it
wow.
for like for a reduced or cost or something like this. It's just like it's a resource for people to get like little grants and stuff for certain things. And we got a little grant to go see a gotcha. Band therapist.
Wow. I feel like comedy needs that, except
comedy doesn't care.
Yeah, comedy doesn't care. That's the problem.
Could care less.
I mean, it does seem like there would be definitely a market for that kind of stuff in comedy for sure. A similar amount of like depressed people and addicts probably in both fields.
My friend in comedy chipped a tooth and then we all just roasted him until he got it fixed. Like that's how.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe musicians are a little more dramatic. I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. I don't really know. But yeah, Music Cares, they're pretty cool. Comedy should have a Comedy Cares, whatever, like the same thing. But
yeah,
useful thing. It was useful for us at the time to be able to know that we could go see a therapist. And even though our therapist wasn't the most, I don't know, maybe we just kind of like stonewalled her and didn't want to let her in, or we just like said stuff that confused her. I can't imagine giving therapy to three people being easy at all.
Yeah.
So
it also kind of reminds me, like my wife and I went to couples therapy just as we were starting fertility stuff. Just as like, hey, let's go while things are good. And then we have someone when things get bad.
Sure.
And we went, and everything that the therapist was asking us, I'm like, oh, we communicate so much. Like there's nothing that the conversation you're trying to facilitate, we've had 10 times already and we're all good. And we left being like, oh, we definitely don't, like, that was a waste of time.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, depending on the therapist, therapy can be a waste of time. Have you seen the show Couples Therapy, the Showtime show?
No,
it's good.
No, not yet.
It's a very, like, not to compare Showtime and HBO, but it feels like an HBO sort of production in that it's like very high production quality, but it's real couples in couples therapy and with their kind of mundane couple problems. But it's a lovely show, and the therapist is an absolute G. Like, she's so cool. It's a great show. It's on, I think you could watch it on Hulu. It's so awesome. It's really moving, like, kind of lovely show. Infuriating at times because the people, it's funny when you're like watching other people get therapy and you're like, how can you not see that this is what the problem is? And then you're like, I'm just like that. Like, I can't see what my problem is. So yeah.
Right.
But it's good. It's cool.
So since we are three queer people here, let's manifest some awesome stuff. Like, who would be, other than, you know, Phoebe Bridgers, Harry Styles, who would be your dream to tour with? Like,
put
it out into the universe and it's going to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are two dream ones that have already happened, which is
right.
So cool.
Where do you go from there?
I don't know. I think we would just...
Someone who's dead. Like, that's...
There's so many different people. I think there's my more clear wish list is like of people that I want to like get on the record, like get them to like,
Oh yeah.
On the record. But I would tour with some of them as well. Like Kacey Musgraves, like,
yes,
all right.
I would do that tour for sure. That would be so fun. Yeah. We've played with so many people that are so cool. I think our main goal is to like have experiences in different sizes of venues. So like, let's like, this will not happen, but like if we were like playing, I don't know, like opening for someone in like a crazy big venue, like opening for someone at
the Garden.
Yeah. The Garden or like what's a big venue in LA? Like the Hollywood Bowl or something that. Or yeah, the Garden or like the O2 in London, like playing those big venues is definitely like on the bucket list. Or opening for people on like an arena tour would just be a really cool experience, like playing really big venues. But man, I'd tour with any of the pop girls. I love them all, and I will tour with any of them if they would like to have us. Any and
Dua
all
Dua
like
Lipa
the
tour.
I would love to do a tour. That would be so cool. Dua, like Olivia Rodrigo, if she wants to take us on a high school tour, yeah. I'll do it. Like she probably won't want to take us because we're too old, but her really, I mean, I don't know, like Paramore would be cool.
Oh man. Yeah.
So cool. Casey, do the Lord tour. I'll do like a Billy tour. I'll whoever wants to take us, do a Halsey tour. I'll do truly anything. Like we just want to like experience and just like be road dogs and tour a lot. So whoever wants to take us, we want to tour with our friends too, like do like a co-headline. We're really good friends with the person, our friend Amber is the Japanese House. You're familiar with the Japanese House?
Yeah. Yeah.
We, nice. I want to do a co-headline with her. That'd be so fun. But yeah, just we'll do, we're road dogs. We'll tour. However,
nice. We put it out there.
What about any musicians when you were growing up that you were like a huge fan of? Like, have you had those experiences in meeting your heroes, or would you ever want to play with them?
I think doing a Paramore tour would be kind of that for me.
Yeah.
Because I was like a pop punk kid growing up. So I think a lot of the bands I was a huge fan of. Yeah. A lot of bands I was a huge fan of growing up, like I probably wouldn't be a good match with on a tour. Like I don't know, us touring with like some of the like more like hardcore punk and like shit that I grew up listening to would probably not be the vibe in terms of like a live show, but a Paramore I think could work, and that would be really fun. And yeah, that would definitely be like me like tripping out a little bit about that.
I saw them open for No Doubt years ago.
Oh, that's so sick. This is so cool ago. I love that.
It was at an amphitheater, but I was in the pit for it. So I was like third row. So much fun. I was too old to be there.
Yeah, I
want to
go get pushed around. Like,
I was just in a mosh pit a few weeks ago.
Sick?
It was everything. I mean, it felt weird being so like out of quarantine and then suddenly in. I went to a pop punk cover band in Austin called Y'all Out Boy.
Oh, fun. That's sick. I would go to that. But, probably stay.
Yeah, moshing. It's like, it is, it feels like the ultimate post-quarantine. I know it's really crazy times right now. It was, we all had to be vaccinated to get tickets, and it was like, but it was bodies, and it felt like I was transported back to like middle school, high school. It was amazing.
Yeah, something about that. Yeah, something about that really just did it for me back in the day. Like I just remember going to shows and having like grown men climb up my back and like launch themselves off of my shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
Like you would just get kicked in the head and like brutalized.
Loved it.
You'd come home absolutely wrecked from the pit, which was, and I liked it at the time. I don't know if I could take it now, but I really loved it at the time. And then a couple years ago I went to a hardcore show and I actually did have a great time. So nice. I think I'd probably still get into it. Yeah. Mosh Pit 2022. Maybe.
Yeah. All right.
Love it.
What's coming up for Muna aside from the tour? What are you guys?
The tour, which
on?
Will be a queer space, a traveling like that's like kind of what all I'm sure like what a Phoebe show will feel like, and it's kind of what our shows feel like, which is really cool and fun to do that every night for a month or 2 months. It's really cool. But yeah, I don't know. We're like we're working on a record. New music is coming. The record's not done, but new music people will hear pretty soon. Like, pretty soon. Before.
Cannot wait.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know how much I could say, but sooner than people think, people will hear new music for sure.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
And where can people follow you online?
I am at Flirt, F-L-U-R-T, Cobain, stupid.
Amazing.
It is what it is.
We love.
Obsessed. Like,
it is what it is. That's my at on everything. And shout out to Nirvana. And at Where Is Muna is my band at everything. Instagram, TikTok. Perfect. We TikTok occasionally. We're learning how to do that. Yeah, Twitter, all that stuff. We're out here. Yeah.
And you have a podcast, just reminding everyone, even though you don't want them to listen to it, this is the crowd. This is the audience.
Oh, they're going to gobble it up.
Go ahead and listen to it. We can barely listen to it ourselves because it's like, some of it's just crazy. We kind of just put the mics on and start talking about the stuff we'd normally talk about without an audience. So it's a little bit insane, but
that's what,
yeah,
the people want.
If people want to know, yeah, more, a lot more about us, definitely a funny way to do it.
That's what I would want from any band that I'm a fan of. I would want their podcast just to be like, I want to be a fly on the wall in the room where they're just...
That's exactly what it is.
Kicking it back. Yeah.
Which Love feels it. Crazy because there's no concept or form. It's very like, it's very postmodern. It's non-structural. It's like the whole bit. So yeah, people might hate it, but I don't know. We continue doing it anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Naomi, for being here and telling us all about touring and watching The Bachelor and everything that we've talked about.
Yeah.
This was a lot of fun, and we're just so excited for you and the band and for all the awesome things coming your way. Just so much talent. And
oh, thank you so much. This was very fun and lovely.
So after we recorded this, I was saying how there's definitely a difference between cool queers from LA and cool queers from New York. And cool queers from New York kind of scare me, or they're intimidating, or they make me feel uncool. Whereas yeah, cool queers from LA make me feel like we're all cool together and having a great time. And that's how I would describe Naomi. And it was so much fun talking with them.
Sun. It's all the sun, you
yeah,
know?
The vibes, the California
vibes.
They're just sharing those vibes with us. And yeah, I so enjoyed that conversation. Naomi is truly a gem of a human. And I can't wait to see Muna in concert. Unfortunately, when they come to New York for Governor's Ball, I'm going to be in Albuquerque, and all their shows with
those
Phoebe Bridgers
seconds,
are sold out.
Yeah.
Wow. We have so many listener questions that have come in the past few weeks since we made a call for them. So thank you again for those questions. And we have to prioritize the ones from our patrons. They go to the top, but we got multiple patron ones. Hopefully this is still helpful, relevant information from one of our patrons. Take it away, Mel.
Okay. God willing, my partner and I will celebrate our 10-year anniversary in a few weeks. I want to plan something romantic. I can do a weekend trip, but nothing too extravagant. She loves adventure and loves exploring places through food. I always feel silly doing things like rose petals because it seems corny, but maybe that's just me. I tend to show my love through practical acts of service. She has said to me multiple times over the years that she would like something more romantic occasionally. How do I romance her? On a budget. We go on weekend trips and outdoor stuff a lot. So if we go on a trip, what makes it a romantic trip? 10 years is a big one, and I want to show her how much I love her in a love language other than health insurance. Well, to two Capricorns. I don't know. I read health insurance and I got wet. Well,
congrats on making it to 10 years, first of all. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this really would have been a good one to do on our hopeful romantic episode. Bye. But hey, we've had time to think about it. We both recently had anniversaries. I think that you can still do, even if you do weekend trips is like your go-to thing, you can still do a weekend trip and take it up another level. So even if you're on a budget, if you can find a way to splurge and get a place that's like a little bit nicer than you usually go, maybe one with a hot tub is usually a romantic thing to add in, if that's something that you enjoy doing, or something with a great view. You know, maybe the inside doesn't have to be fancy, but the location can be romantic somewhere. I mean, I personally find deserts or anywhere that's like super secluded to be very romantic, where, you know, unobstructed view of the skies, all the stars. taking it to the next level, if she loves exploring places through food. I mean, you could recreate a meal from like a memorable meal from a date that you had in the beginning of when you dated or something like that. Buy sexy underwear to surprise her with, I think is always a fun thing for a weekend trip, right?
Yeah. I mean, she likes to be in nature. She likes to go on adventures. Like, it's easy to incorporate more romance into that. Even if you go on a hike, like, just bring a knife and carve your initials into a certain tree, and that'll be your tree. You know, like, little
right.
things like that can really up the romance.
Pack a surprise picnic. Just add unexpected things. So, yeah, even if you're doing the same things, there's always like a little twist you can add to it to make it more romantic. Really, the element of surprise. I mean, rose petals, I don't know. I don't think it's corny. Do you think it's corny? I've never seen rose petals and been like, boo. So yeah. Like, oh. All right. Yeah. You know, this feel, you know, a couple candles.
Maybe it's such a thing that everyone thinks is like sort of a movie or cliche that no one ends up doing it. And
yeah,
it's not actually played. No one ever does it. Rose petals, do they?
I've done it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm so not romantic in that way. I'm just like, ugh, roses are so expensive. We're going to tear the petals.
Yeah, I've done rose petals. I've also done fake rose petals once because I had to travel with them and I didn't want them to get like all messed up. Once it was Cecilia's birthday when we were traveling and I let the hotel know and then they just did it in the room and put all the rose petals all over the bed, which I wasn't expecting for a birthday. I'm like, well, this is romantic for
yeah,
a birthday surprise.
Just in general, romantic date ideas. I've always wanted to, I've been putting this off, but making a date jar where you each put in like X amount of little notes, like slips of paper with fun things to do with each other. So you always have a fun romantic date on hand that you know the other person is into because they wrote it.
I mean, something else that could be fun for 10 years. I just finally got a new cell phone and was organizing my pictures and like transferring everything off and grouping things into albums and just seeing like all the pictures from Cecilia and I from the past 4 years that I've had this phone filled me up with like so much joy and made me feel so lovey-dovey that, you know, a lot of times we take so many pictures and then we do nothing with them. So I would say, you know, you have 10 years of photos and memories, and there are so many ways, even if it's just like a scrapbook or something, but some type of physical manifestation of that. Even if you make like a slideshow, make a cheesy slideshow to a song that you both love or something like that and show it to her, like that would be touching and unexpected coming from you if your thing is usually just, you know, calling the cable company to dispute a charge. Don't be afraid of being corny, I would say.
Yeah.
I've never, like, I can't think of any time that somebody did something corny where I was like, oh, God, no.
Endearing.
Yeah. As long as you love the person.
I was going to say, yeah, you can find something corny, but chances are you don't love them. You can't. It's impossible to feel that way about someone you're in love with.
Yeah.
Also, first date, you could do a staycation. You cut the cost of travel and go drive somewhere close by. Airbnb has like tiny houses now, or just like
tree houses.
Those are a little more expensive, but the tiny houses like in the woods, I don't know where this listener's writing from, but they have
Pacific Northwest area, so there's probably a billion options.
Yeah there's some good affordable options, I guess, especially if you're looking for flexible dates. They have like a flexible, flexible option. So you can like schedule that trip and do some of Carolyn's romantic ideas in the interim.
Here's another idea. If you have time to plan it, if you can secretly ask your friends, people who know you both as a couple, and get them to write down or send you like their favorite memory of you two as a couple. And maybe that could go along with the pictures. And that's always like a fun thing to read nice things that other people say about you two. Kind of like when you get married, you know? But if you've been together for 10 years, that seems like a cool time to do that.
Yeah. Ooh, a 10-year anniversary, schedule a photo shoot. Is that romantic? Or is just for like people as vain as us?
Comedians, yeah.
Comedians love photos of themselves and...
It's so funny. Cecilia always wants to do a photo shoot with me and I have zero interest. I'm like, can we just have pictures of us while we're like doing things on vacation? I like those photos, but I don't need like a photo shoot besides our wedding. But I guess it's different when you're both performers.
True. We love it. We've done it. Okay.
Yeah. It could be cute, but I think that's a more than enough ideas.
Yeah. We can maybe like... have people weigh in on the post, the episode post, with some budget-friendly, romantic anniversary date ideas.
Yes, yes. Post it on our post with the episode art this week. And if you have a question, you know, even though we have a bunch in the bag, you can still send it in, dykingout@gmail.com. And you can follow us everywhere at Dyking Out. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn. Hey, now that I have a new phone, I might... start doing more on social media.
Look at that.
Now that I'm not going to have people mock me for my camera, possibly. I still have an Android. I'm not giving it up.
What was that? We made a TikTok and someone commented, like, who's the one Android? With the Android?
Yeah, whose Android was this taped on? Sorry, I don't like to upgrade my phones unless I need to because I care about the environment and my wallet. Mostly my wallet.
Look at that. But also gay the environment. Reasoning. Look at it. Okay. You can follow me at Melody Kamali, where I'm hoping to get a Fire Island post up there. Check it out.
That's all from us this week. We hope you join us to dyke out again next week, and
we'll see you next Tuesday.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.